Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Mark Moriarty, award-winning chef, TV host and author, has just launched his second book, Season. It's all about mastering the elements of taste. And Mark is here in the studio. You've also launched your own podcast, just in case you didn't have enough to do. It's called Roasted with Mark Moriarty. We'll come back to the podcast in a minute. I want to talk about the book first, because I did embark on my own little journey last night.
I saw that on Instagram.
The beef bourguignon. I said, I'd give this a go. And then I realised I'd no pearl onions. I have to take the children to meet their friends today. It needs 3 hours in the oven. So how am I going to get this thing finished, Mark? What are we going to do?
You're going to delegate to your husband, I believe, is
yeah,
the plan.
Yeah, who's also really busy today and doesn't know what a brown onion is. So we might be in trouble. Can I leave it marinating for another day and cook it off tomorrow?
Absolutely.
Will it be fine?
Yeah, it'll be fine. Or what you can do is, just before you go to bed tonight, you can finish it off, stick it in a slow cooker and leave it tick away for 10 hours overnight, and it'll be there in the morning. Let it marinate for the day, and then all you have to do is put together the mash or the roast potatoes tomorrow.
Oh,
and you're laughing.
That sounds good. Although my slow cooker is vicious, so I put it on the low setting and it's really aggressive.
Okay,
I think it has a problem, so I might just low oven it tomorrow, maybe over the course of the day. Someone was on to me on Instagram and said that they always leave the bay leaves out of a marinade and wondered, does that make a big difference? They wanted me to ask you that.
So I always wonder this when it comes to, like, when we're doing recipes in the restaurant kitchen, you're trying to do everything traditionally and properly, and then you look at the cost of all the time and the garlic and the bay leaves that go into the marinade, and you kind of question, well, how much effect does it have on it?
Mm.
If you don't have bay leaves, I wouldn't be stressing. If you don't have time, if you're literally just marinating in the red wine, it's going to be perfect, because really what's going to make the impact is the other end of the recipe, where you're adding your salt and your pepper at the very end and getting the texture right and all the seasonings.
Right. Okay. I had dried thyme. I didn't have fresh.
I'm sure that was fine too.
I'll get away with it, won't I?
Well, that's the secret of home cooking. Most recipes, I don't have half the stuff, so I leave them out or add replacements, and so long as it's seasoned, it's always going to taste good.
Right. See, I always feel that I've cheated on the recipe if I don't follow it exactly.
It's called winging it. Yeah. Winging it in the kitchen.
We do a bit of that too. Now, season is all about cooking with the seasons. Is that important to you? Like, when you see people using strawberries now in wintertime, does that bother you?
No, it doesn't. God, there's way more serious things going on in the world. It doesn't bother me. The reason I wanted to put a seasonal slant on this book was to keep it simple in terms of the chapters. And it's more the style of dishes that fit your mood based on the four seasons. So, like, it's going to start getting cold in the next few weeks, and I'm going to be into the beef bourguignons and the slow roast things.
Mm-hmm.
And then the summer, it's more about the salads and the bright flavours and the feta and the mint and the lemon juice. But where it really makes an impact for people at home doing their shopping is, I'm not here to say, look, oh, I'm an artist chef and it has to be seasonal and it has to be all that. It's the bang for your buck and the quality of food you're getting. If you try and order or shop for a couple of seasonal bits, now it's not going to be possible to have a whole seasonal shop and you go to the supermarket. But if you order something or buy something at the moment that's, say, pumpkin around Halloween, bang in season, because it's in abundance, the price is going to come down because of supply and demand, so it's better for your pocket. Because it's in season, it's going to be at its absolute peak, so there's going to be higher sugar content, it's going to taste better, you're going to get more out of it, it's going to give you more pleasure to eat. And then because it's in season, it hasn't had to be flown halfway around the world from South America or the Middle East or wherever. So it's supporting that sort of local ecosystem of businesses, and it has that sort of sustainability element. So they're the most important things.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you go to a restaurant and I'm paying big money, I'm expecting to eat seasonal, top quality local ingredients. But on a Wednesday night at home, it's more if I can save a bit of money by having a few seasonal ingredients, that's a bigger impact for me.
And time, which is also
time is
important,
money.
Yeah. Have you a favourite season in terms of ingredients?
I think I'm coming into it now. I love, for me, food's all about comfort. If I'm tired or stressed or whatever, it's generally I'll go and make something nice for dinner, or I'll go to a nice takeaway. So I like winter, where it's proper mashed potatoes, it's slow braises, it's pure comfort food. And even I've noticed in my restaurant cooking, while it might look quite fancy, the fine dining style dishes, they're always based off the comfort dishes that we eat at home, just sort of brought to another level.
Right.
So I think a lot of the time I get a bit annoyed at some of the restaurant airy fairy things that go on around the world. We're losing the whole fact that if you're going to a restaurant, you're paying money to eat delicious, comforting food and to feel good about yourself. And that's important for me.
There's a lot to be said for it, isn't there? Mm. Just going back to ingredients and winging it, are there a few store cupboard staples that really we should have? You know, things like the tomato puree and seasonings that you think everybody really, you do need to have those things there?
Yeah, you'll have it. You'll see it in the book Season. So literally the first couple of pages are, first chapter is on seasonings, and the second chapter is the basics range, which is the most basic recipes you could imagine, which are really important in all my books and all my stuff. It's based off what we would have done in the restaurant kitchen. We would always had a section called the sort of the jazzy bits, I would call them. So it's the, when your sauce is coming up in the restaurant, you might add a little bit of vinegar or lemon juice or some smoked salt or a little knob of butter or some really good olive oil just to turn a good sauce into a great sauce. And it's the same at home for me. So my store cupboard will always have salt and pepper, a decent enough olive oil, which I love as a seasoning, just raw. I never heat up olive oil or cook with it because it just destroys the flavour.
Don't you?
Nope.
What oil do you cook with then?
It's just plain, the cheapest bog standard vegetable oil for hard cooking. Because it's, if you buy a really nice olive oil, stick it in a pan, heat it up, it breaks down all the flavour, bleaches the colour and it turns it really, really bitter. Whereas all the nuances in the flavour are from the raw pressed olive oil. So I'll always have that. I'll have really good salted butter. And then the things I love are a dash of soy sauce in like a spaghetti bolognese, or a good tablespoon of Dijon mustard in a chicken casserole. Tabasco sauce I love to give something a kick.
What about Worcester?
Worcester sauce again, but I often find you have to add a lot of Worcester to get some impact, whereas soy sauce you can do a smaller amount. And the thing is, use lots of everything. There's a lot of recipes, it's a teaspoon of this, you might as well add a dash of water. Use good quantities of like a tablespoon of Dijon.
We're ignoring the recipes all over the place here.
Just get it in there.
Anne in Dingle didn't ignore the recipe though, because she made your tikka masala. It was fabulous. They had a big meal with family at home and they all loved it. So you'll be glad to hear that.
Yeah.
Trish had to import dried wild garlic last month from France. And she was so annoyed that she couldn't get it in Ireland. Is that a problem that you've come across?
Well, wild garlic would only be in season from, it comes out sort of late February, early March. Actually, it's a bit later now in the last years because it gets so cold.
But she got it dried, so obviously it wasn't. Didn't
dried is
be
fine,
in
but
season.
I would be saying if you're using wild garlic this time of year, you're better off just using a nice, just garlic, normal garlic. And then I would say when it comes to wild garlic season in April, May next year, that's when I'd be picking a few leaves and getting it through a pasta or something like that.
Yeah, go for it then. Actually, speaking of pasta, one of the dishes you have in here, which is really simple, is the penne. Mm. But you have kept it so, so easy and so simple. But you say it was one of the best things that you'd eaten in this fancy Italian restaurant that you went to.
Yeah, so we go every year. I'm fortunate. 10 years ago now, when I was young, I won the San Pellegrino Young Chef of the Year. And I get invited back as a winner to Milan to the grand final every
nice.
2 years. And they get these amazing Michelin-starred Italian chefs to cook at the banquets. And I always remember one of them. We got loads of fancy little modern bits. They were grand. But the thing that blew me away was a massive pot at the table of tomato penne pasta. And the best one I've ever had. So the recipe in the book is, everyone has penne pasta. But instead of just getting pasta sauce or tomato sauce out of a jar, we get a load of tomatoes, slice them, marinate them and stick them in the oven for a couple of hours. And what the oven does is it removes all the excess water, which tastes of nothing, intensifies the flavour of the tomato, and then you blend it up with some good olive oil and just fold it through tomato sauce. And for
okay.
me, that's...
Can I just go back now to the marinating stage? What are you marinating them in?
So what I do is I slice the tomatoes in half, and these are just generic tomatoes, nothing fancy. Salt, pepper, a little bit of paprika, a few little slices of garlic, and then tomato paste and good olive oil. And actually, I add a little bit of sugar. Put it in the oven. I think it's, in the recipe, about 100 degrees for 4 or 5 hours.
It's really low oven.
So they go like sun-dried tomatoes in the really low oven. Straight into my blender, I just use a Nutribullet. I add a little bit more olive oil, a load more salt. I squeeze out the garlic from the skin.
Yeah.
Because I'm too lazy to peel them at the first stage. And then I blend it all up. Adjust my seasoning. A little bit of Dijon mustard maybe in there, a little bit of lemon juice. And then you can freeze it down, you can keep it in the fridge for 3 days, or you can fold it straight through your pasta and you will never have tomato sauce like it.
Delicious. One thing I wanted to ask you about, you have the recipe for cooking the perfect steak, because you say everybody asks you about that all of the time. Now, I have a really old Mary Berry book, really, really old Mary Berry book, and she says that she has an issue with people putting salt on raw steak. She says it draws the juices out to the surface and your steak will be a bit drier. But you say that you should nearly encrust the steak in salt. Mm. So where do you stand on that?
So to take on Mary Berry, she's right in one sense, in that what a lot of people will do is they'll add the salt and leave it sit for 5 or 6 minutes. And by the time, what happens, the salt draws out moisture.
Mm.
You'll have a layer of water between the surface of the pan and the steak, and you won't get that really hard caramelization. But she's probably saying that you're not going to get your pan very hot at home, which is often the mistake people make. So my one is crust it in salt, because half of it, like 80% of the salt is going to fall off in the pan. But the key point is you have to have your pan absolutely smoking hot. So if it's not smoking hot, it doesn't matter what you do, you're not going to have the perfect steak.
Scary hot.
Scary hot, to the point where the fire alarm's going off, as it used to be with me as a kid, and my parents would go mental. And I'd be like, but this means I'm cooking the steak properly. So really, really high heat. Cook it hard on both sides. Loads and loads of seasoning, because half it falls off, and you're almost all the way to a perfect steak.
Okay, so it's a compromise between the two of you. You're both right.
I would not take on Mary Berry for the life of me.
No, I don't think you should. Now, the podcast series is called Roasted. Why did you decide to do this?
My Claire Byrne impression. I loved the idea of making documentaries, and we did some amazing ones for RT over the last few years. But the amount of time and money it took, it just became not feasible. But I said, well, I still love that idea of interviewing and the idea of food as a tool to interview.
Mm-hmm.
So hence the podcast came up as an idea that's a little bit simpler to do. So it's all about notable Irish people from Irish life, from lots of different areas. And it's not about what they do in their career, if they're a politician or a sports person. It's about the behind the scenes, peek behind the curtain things. So like our episode this week was Leo Varadkar. And it wasn't about me asking Leo what he did in government or whatever. It was like, when you go to the White House, how do you get there? What do you eat? Where do you stay? What sort of small talk do you have to make behind the scenes? Fascinating insights and things like that. Or it's more about, what did you have in your fridge this morning? Do you go to the supermarket and do a shop? If you go to the supermarket, surely people start annoying you, and stories like that. And it's all about...
And then you come up with a meal for the guest at the end,
yeah.
Do you? You create something.
So that's actually more for me. That's the icebreaker for me, because I'm not a professional interviewer. So what I do is I send an email to all of our guests a week ahead, and I go, just give me one ingredient or one dish that's you're loving at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens is, as they come into the studio to sit down, after we've had our coffee outside and done our briefing, there's a very fancy version of that ingredient or dish. And it kind of disarms the guests a little bit. And they kind of go, oh, what's this all about? And it allows me to just kind of break the ice and get into the interview.
So you're
really
cooking
personal.
The night before, are you?
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I'm very practical. We don't have much cooking facilities in the podcast studio, but it's usually sort of... So with Leo, his was ice cream. So I just made him ice cream and didn't tell him the flavour. And the first 2 minutes of the podcast are the former Taoiseach trying to guess what flavour ice cream he's eating.
What flavour?
And it's just that personable. Coconut. It was coconut.
Kept it simple.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a great device. It's a great way to do it. But how are you finding it being on the other side of the microphone? Because you're more used to this.
I think I prefer where I am here.
Really?
It's definitely easier to answer the questions. But it's fascinating. There's a certain sanctity to a podcast studio, and food is such a common denominator. It doesn't matter who you are, everyone eats. And two people have cried so far in interviews. And it's, I don't know, it's just food's a very personable thing. And I've enjoyed, if you just listen, I used to go into the first few episodes with all these questions and structure. It goes out the window. Just listen to what people are saying. Ask some questions on it. And we've had Leo Varadkar, Dermot Bannon, Sophie Becker. We've got the likes of Brian O'Driscoll coming up, Brian Dobson, who was fascinating to talk to. So people from Irish life that everyone will know and hopefully have some sort of insight into, but an interview that gives a whole new perspective on their life and career.
All right. Well, listen, Season is out now in the shops. It Roasted is. People can find online wherever they get their podcast.
And the book
from.
Actually is up for the Irish, the On Post Irish Book Award.
Ah, congratulations
on
the nomination.
Throw us a vote. It's election season.
Why not? And listen, I'll let you know how I get on with the beef when it eventually gets made, but it will, either today or tomorrow. Mark Moriarty, thank you so much for coming in. Always good to see you. We'll take a break.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.